Hey, folks. Welcome to Relevant Tones. I'm your host, Austin Williams. I'm going to try and bring you out of that as gently as possible. That was a lovely piece, or should I say, a very short excerpt of a rather larger scale piece by Noah Jenkins, our featured composer today. The title of that piece is Rotations, Placement, Provenance Everywhere. And the total length of that piece is somewhere around an hour. It is a long form drone work, and Noah seems to really be infatuated and dives into this aesthetic headfirst. And I am really pleased to feature him on here as a guest and as a friend, and to showcase his lovely music. Noah and I had a lovely conversation about the process of collaborating with Riley Leach, the trombonist that did a majority, or if not all, the recordings of this. And they came out with an album that features this piece and another piece titled Without Persistence, Environments, let me pull up the full title here. It's a little long as well. Without persistent environments, the sense of confusion and flux might all only worsen. And yeah, both are lovely pieces that take a bit of time to enjoy, but I encourage everyone after listening to this episode to go and listen to them in their entirety. And Noah even mentioned that it's okay to get up and leave and come back in the middle of a piece. It's not just to sit down and listen, but I think that like any long form piece like this, just the journeys that it takes you on and the surprise where you will be taken with just such a seemingly slow moving motion. With that being said, before we jump into the interview, I would love to encourage everybody to jump to our Patreon and support us at patreon.com/relevanttones. For just $5 a month, you can help us continue to bring you interviews and music by some of the most creative musicians on the planet. For the price of a coffee every month, you can support us. So, without any further rambling, let's jump into the interview with myself and Noah. Thanks.
Sounds good. Happy to be here.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm Noah Jenkins. I'm a composer. I play violin, viola, and synthesizers sometimes. Electric guitar less often these days.
But yeah.
It's been important in my life before.
Sure.
Just released this record with Riley Leach. It's called Without Persistent Environments, which is two trombone and electronics pieces that Riley has played a lot, and we recorded a few years ago and got it out on CD now.
Yeah. So yes, it's a lovely album with only two tracks, each quite long. I'd listened to like excerpts of it before, and I didn't realize that all these different things were just between two tracks. So there's about an hour and 20 minutes of music on this album, or maybe an hour and 15, but in that ballpark, but it's only between two tracks. So, I thought that was kind of cool. So, admittedly have not listened to it all the way through yet, but I plan
to. There's time still.
Time. Yeah. I plan to take the time to do that, because given that I know like the format that it's in, but no, that's fantastic. And Riley's a good friend of mine as well. And he's just such a wonderful collaborator and performer. But I would love, so let's kind of jump into it. I'd love for you to talk a bit about what the album means to you. I see that maybe some of these pieces were written, you know, pre-pandemic, which may be why it's being released in 2024. We've all
astute, you know, observation.
Yes, we've all been there. But you know, I'd still love to hear maybe what that journey has been like, you know. Resting
sure.
on this music for as long as it has. So floor is yours.
It's my first time releasing in an album format, recording some of my work, so that has felt really exciting and something I've wanted to do for a long time. Like, mm-hmm. As I'm sure is probably true for a lot of people, but recorded music has been like the most important way I experience music in my life for a long time. Definitely the first most important way. And so it feels really exciting to have something in like that I really took care with to present as a, like as a recording.
Yeah.
I mean, there's still concert pieces in their original conception for sure. But you know, I think for a few years I was getting really tired of having live recordings of my work where, you know, as is common in the, I don't know, the university composer setting.
Right, right. And live recordings are great, but like you never know, like, you know, performers are imperfect creatures and we love them, but you never know what's going to happen. And that's totally part of it, you know, but then you're kind of left with this product or this moment in time and you wish you could kind of go back and let it be a bit more, I mean, I don't want to say perfect because sometimes in the recording process, you find aspects of it, imperfections that you're like, you know, maybe that's, I like that. That's okay. But, you know, there's.
Yeah, of course.
There's.
But like it gets to be, if not more perfect, like more what it is.
Sure.
I think
I was
getting really frustrated with like the cycle of an ensemble shows up for a residency and you get 2 45-minute rehearsals with them. But then frequently, you know, the ensemble leaves town and you're left with the live concert recording and that's what we get.
Right. Right.
But you know, Riley had played the longer piece on the album, Rotations, Placement, Providence Everywhere. Which I'd written in a setting like that actually for Weston Olenke when he was doing a residency at Northwestern.
Oh, okay, got it.
2018. I wrote that for him then, and he gave an amazing premiere of it too. And like, then I forget if Riley was at that show or if he came into contact with the piece some other way, but
yeah.
Bye. Really got really deep inside of it. And
yeah,
so getting to spend, you know, multiple performance cycles with him, getting to know that piece.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
Was felt like a real luxury. And same with the other piece too, the short one on the album at like 19 minutes, without persistent environments, the sense of confusion and flux might only worsen. After playing the rotations placement Providence Everywhere, Riley wanted to commission that piece from me and
yeah,
and did a little tour with that and some other pieces he'd commissioned throughout like the Midwest. And I think he played it like 6 times or something on that tour, which was like, oh yeah, that's a lot of repetition. That's really getting to know the music. And
yeah, yeah,
I got to see a couple of the performances too, which was great. And getting to have a few more go rounds with it.
I mean, such
before
as
making an album,
right?
So good.
Right. And I mean, such as the plight of like new classical music, it like sees the concert hall one time and then it goes to die, unfortunately. Especially mm-hmm. like you said, in like an academic or university setting, you know, it's just like
all too often
you write a piece for a specific ensemble or individual that's coming, and they, like you said, like they'll do a good job. You'll get like rehearsal time and they'll do the piece justice a lot of times, but you're left with this, you're wanting, you know, more mm-hmm. to develop it and seek it out. So, and that's why I think it's so important to find these as composers. It's so important to find like performers that are willing to hold on to something for a really long time, or if they really identify or want to grasp onto a piece of your music, like, you know, hold on to that performer because
yeah,
you know, yeah. They'll be your friend.
Yeah, Riley isn't going anywhere.
Thank you.
So I'd love to hear maybe a little bit about the recording process after he'd been working with it for so long. Like, was it very natural, or were there moments of like, oh, I know I can do this like the best I can because we're recording it?
The rotations placement has a max patch that's basically like a live looping setup.
Mm-hmm.
Where there are a few different layers of trombone that he's recording and then overriding and stuff. And so we were just running that just like live in the studio pretty much. Mm-hmm. We were able to go back and like do a little bit of surgery and like swapping out slightly more perfect tones for less perfect ones and smoothing some pops out here and there, but the other piece is just Riley plays in a live situation, plays live with a pre-recorded track that consists of like some spliced together in situ recordings that I made of him playing by the lake, Lake Michigan here in Chicago, and in my apartment at the time, and in the sanctuary of St. Vincent de Paul Catholic Church, also in Chicago. And so live, there's just like a stereo playback of that track. So he's playing with several versions of himself playing in those places and the environmental sounds of those places.
Oh yeah, for sure. Can I ask you,
which is kind of interesting too, is,
go ahead.
Oh, just because like in that piece, then in a live situation, like there's sort of this subtle but real interaction between like the ambiance and environmental sound of the spaces in the track that I recorded Riley playing in, and then the space of the room that Riley and the audience and the recording are existing in that moment.
Thank you. So without persistent environments, the sense of confusion and flux might only worsen. Seems to be very driven by like spaces and you know all that. So what was kind of the impetus for that, or what was your initial inclination for going that route?
Mm-hmm. I'd been playing around with field recordings for a while, I guess about a year at that point.
Yeah.
I just bought a little Zoom recorder and like was making some recordings and thinking about like that kind of listening, that not just the kind of listening that you do without recording out in the world, but thinking about that too, but also the kind of listening that the act of recording would engender in me. Mm. I don't know, makes me feel like I'm performing listening in some way for an audience, maybe of just me to listen back to later.
Yeah.
And yeah, so like through a lot of experiments with field recording in that sort of way, like started to think about how I might incorporate that into my like work as a composer making concert pieces.
Yeah.
And this was sort of trying to think now, maybe my second foray into that.
Yeah, and it's interesting because we touched on this a little bit already, but you're bringing these spaces to a more controlled environment, I guess. If you're taking these field recordings and you're really allowing the environment to exist without, you know, ideally you wouldn't have any influence on like, you know, what's going on while you're doing the field recording. And that's kind of the goal, right? You're just kind of like capturing a space and what it sounds like. So then also using that as thinking of that as a recording space and then bringing that to a concert hall is just like the layers of like sound space and spaces in which sound exists, and then the culmination of them all together is really fascinating. And then furthermore, bringing a performer to those spaces and actually kind of disrupting them in some way is an even more interesting thought.
Yeah, I was definitely also like part of this exploration was inspired by the composer Catherine Lamb and her, like she has this series of pieces called Prisma Interius, where they're all pieces for live acoustic instruments played by people. Mm-hmm. And they also incorporate an instrument that she developed with her partner, Brian Eubanks, called the Secondary Rainbow Synthesizer.
Oh, okay.
Which... Have you heard about this?
No, I haven't.
It's super cool.
I'll have to check it out.
So it's like in the piece, the instrument consists of like some microphones placed outside the performance space. So like they're listening to the external sonic environment. Huh. And those mics are run through a patch that is it's like a bank of resonant bandpass filters.
Oh, okay.
So it like lets through a flexible, but like a narrow band of frequencies that's controlled by a keyboard.
Oh, cool.
And you can like open the filter to make it a wider band or close it so it's a lot narrower. So like the outside environment is basically this white noise source.
Yeah.
Roughly speaking, that's then being filtered by the keyboard. So you can kind of play the outside sounds this sort of organ. And some of the pieces have like this amazing... Like, the one I know the best, number 9, is this, like, 3-minute section where the filter is just, like, there's a cord being held and the filter is slowly opened. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, like, it starts off just sounding like this chord, and then, like, over the 3 minutes, it sort of dissolves in, like, you stop hearing the chord and you start hearing whatever sounds are happening.
Oh.
Outside the performance or recording in this case, as I know the piece.
Yeah, yeah.
this group Vondelweiser,
yeah,
for kind of a community of musicians that sort of started as this like post Cage thing and involved a lot of silence and a lot of sort of alternative notation stuff.
Yeah.
It's like, I feel like that was sort of what they were doing in the early 90s, but like it's expanded so much since then. But sure. It's hard to talk about what they are because it's such an amorphous and like intentionally so amorphous like idea that centers them.
I know it personally as like you said, like kind of just as like this post Cage thing, but yeah, anyway. Yeah.
But I ramble. I digress.
Yeah.
I was at a sort of summer, and again, like not a summer festival per se, but like a thing called Composers Meet Composers that some of those artists put on. So I got to do like a week of close mentoring with a few different composers, and a lot of them were like interested in working with field recordings as well.
Mm-hmm.
The people who were there as mentors were Antoine Boyger, Jörg Frey, Emmanuel Wackerly, and Marianne Schupa.
Mm.
And oh man, you'll edit this so I remember everyone, right?
It's okay. And, I mean, even if you don't, it's all good.
Joaquin Eckel is the other one.
Oh, okay. And, yeah, for sure.
He and I had a really long conversation about field recordings, and he'd been working with Michael Pissarro on some an installation using field recordings and some performances that were not just field recordings, but also like live performances in specific environments.
Okay.
So all that stuff was kind of cooking in my head, and just kind of thinking about ways I could bring those ideas into my own work or sort of put my own thoughts into that conversation.
Yeah, it's really interesting. I don't want to say it puts like composers in different camps, but there's like, or specifically electronic composers, I feel like that there's like electronic composers that use a lot of synthesis and processing of like sound that's happening in the concert hall, and then folks who are using a lot of field recordings or stuff like that and processing them or using them as like fixed meter or whatever, and obviously people blend the two and do some synthesis of the two, no pun intended. It's really interesting how there's kind of two camps from what I've discovered. And I don't think that's like a bad thing or whatever, but it's, funny how humans tend to fall into dichotomies like this for some reason.
But yeah, that I love that listening back process too. I don't know. Sometimes I wish I did it sooner after recording, but sometimes it's really interesting to wait a little while and sort of like let the memory of like everything that was going on when you were recording fade a little bit,
mm-hmm.
and then let that be reawakened by listening back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, you're creating temporal space then too, right? You know,
yeah,
bridging
totally.
That gap between like present, past, all that stuff, and creating a future as well. Because we work in a temporal medium, you know, as people who write music, and but we also have to consider the space in which these things are going to exist. So, yeah,
mm-hmm. yeah. And space is so important in shaping sound. Like, not just the like. I mean, yeah, so many rabbit holes to go down here. But like, you know, the sort of, what is it, Armory Schaefer ideas about like sound marks.
Oh,
there being like,
yeah,
like specific sounds that are specific or unique to a place that sort of define that place in sound.
Okay, yeah, oh yeah.
For example, sure. Like the waves on the shore of Lake Michigan, like mm-hmm. that's a unique feature that sort of like locates you in that space and
mm-hmm.
maybe sort of shapes the way people or other creatures relate to that space.
Yeah.
But also like the way that space physically like shapes sound waves.
anything else that we haven't touched on that you want to talk about this album, or and even anything, you know, we can think about that, but then, you know, anything in the future that you want to plug as well, for is yours to promote and do what you got.
It's a little late after the release date, but that's not that important. Riley and I are playing a album release show at Comfort Station, March 8th at 7:30 PM.
Awesome.
Come on out to Logan Square, and he's going to play Without Persistent Environments.
Nice.
And also a piece that he's been working on. I'll play a set.
Nice.
And we'll all have a good time. Have some CDs there.
Nice. Yeah.
We'll all hang and hear some sounds in space and time together. Should be a good time.
Yeah. So if you're in Chicago, because not everyone that listens to this is in Chicago.
That's right.
If you're in Chicago, and if you're not aware, Comfort Station is it's a nonprofit, but it's also kind of a DIY venue. Look it up on socials. They have a website as well. Just Google it. But they're located in Logan Square. So go check them out, but also be on lookout for Noah and Riley's concert on March 8th.
And if you fly in from out of town, I'll just give you a CD for free.
That'd be pretty. I think that'd be the most epic crowd Comfort Station's ever encountered, if that's the case.
That'd be amazing.
Awesome. Well,
I guess one other thing that's sort of on the horizon. I mean, it's hard to say because I'm still writing the piece, but in February of 2025, long time from now,
year away.
I have a piece that's going to be played at the LA Phil for their Green Umbrella New Music Series.
Awesome.
Still working on it, but it should be a really fun piece.
Yeah.
It's going to be for a little string orchestra, multi-keyboard setup, and two percussionists.
Oh, that's great.
Should be a blast. I'm having a great time thinking about different sounds I can tease out of that ensemble. And
oh, yeah.
So that's the horizon at the moment.
Okay. Yeah, well, good luck writing that. I'm sure I look forward to hearing about the premiere.
Thanks. Yeah.
And potentially hearing the piece as well. But yeah, good luck with all that and any other stuff you got going on, man. Yeah, thanks for thanks for being on the show.
Thanks. Yeah, thanks for having me.
Yeah. And that is all the time we have today for our chat with Noah. I had a great time talking with him and his music and exploring these lovely long form and just sonic journeys that he creates for us to do whatever you want with, honestly. I don't think there's any correct way to listen to this type of music. You just kind of experience it as you will. So that's that. Just wanted to say real quick that Relevant Tones is a production of Access Contemporary Music, a nonprofit organization with a mission of providing equitable access to the transformative power of music making. Find out more at acmusic.org. For Relevant Tones, I'm Austin Williams, and thanks so much for listening. Catch you next time.